Okay. Let me see if I can get this. I want this to sound good. Okay. Yippee-ki-yay. That doesn't... Be a little more... A little tougher I need to go here. Yippee-ki-yay. Let's see here. Well, I could go with like a cowboy theme kind of. Yippee-ki-yay. No, that doesn't sound good. I go with the Alan Rickman, Hans Gruber. Yippee-ki. That's not sounding right either. I'll go with my own. Just go with my own voice. It's always the best route. Trying to imitate does not work, so. Yippee-ki-yay, mother.
Hello and welcome back to another episode of Throwback Reviews Podcast. This is episode 5. This week we are doing the 1988 film Die Hard. Let me introduce the host here again. To my virtual right, we have Steve Cherubino. What's up, Steve?
Going on, Sean? I'm raring to go this episode, dude.
Awesome. Let's just hope that our other host here is to my left, door-to-door geek, Steve McLaughlin. What's up, Dor?
Sorry, what? Oh, hey, how's it going, Sean?
Everything's going good.
Good.
Everything's going good, man. Everyone feeling all right?
Dor watched this movie when it came out. He's all set.
I've watched it a couple of times. I mean, come on, it's Die Hard. First thing I got to say about the movie, one of the best music beginning and ending songs to a movie, period.
How do you know we're doing Die Hard? Sean didn't even say anything about it yet.
Because I listened to the show last week where he said the movie next week is Die Hard.
And I do believe I just said 3 seconds ago the 1988 movie Die Hard, but...
Oh, man. I'm out of it then.
I'm glad Dor watched. This was actually my first time for this show seeing Die Hard from beginning to end.
Wow.
I've always caught it in bits and pieces.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was one of those HBO things, you know, and I was trying to think about this today. I was trying to think, am I really an action film fan? Like, am I really a fan of action movies? And I was thinking about movies like today. You know, you got like Spider-Man and the new Superman and all the like DC and stuff. Like, I'm not a fan of that stuff at all. I'm just not. I'm not a comic book guy. My wife likes it. You know, she'll, every time she wants to watch these movies, and I'll start to, but I'm just like, it's nap time.
Well, I'll say send all hate mail to doorthdoorgeek@gmail.com. Comic movies are not action movies. Most of them are actually dramas with some action in it.
All right. I'll give you that.
Yeah. I won't.
I would, I'm sure you I won't. Think I'm going to step back here.
Do you like?
I consider them action-y movies.
Well, they are definitely have action in them. But to me, like a true to the core action movie would be like Expendables.
Jason Statham.
No, Expendables, because it's all just pointless action.
He was in the Expendables.
Okay, thank you. A lot of people are in it. Piper wasn't in it, but a lot of other people are in it. Movies like that. Certain Arnold movies. Because they're just pure action. The whole point of the movie is the action. Where a lot of movies today feel like they have to either do some comedy or some drama or some romance or some bromance. You know, Lethal Weapon, I would say the first one to a degree was an action movie.
I don't know. Yes and no. I know what you're saying about. This is a touchy subject I just brought up, isn't it? We're going to hash this out for 20 minutes.
I think it was more... I think that Lethal Weapon 1 was more dramatic. There was a lot of story in that, I think.
Not going to argue.
Can we take this back to the comic book thing? Because I'm not a comic book movie fan either. And people cannot believe... When I talk to people, they can't believe that I don't like some of those movies. They're like... You didn't like X-Men? What's wrong with you? Like, I'm like, I don't know. I just can't get into those movies. I'm not a huge comic book fan movie, action slash drama. So I know exactly what you mean.
Yeah, and I know what Dor's saying as far as, all right, not being an action, because there's like the stories, you know, story arcs and everything that go along. But to me, yeah, it's actiony. I consider it an action movie. So I was thinking that today, and I was trying to think of movies that would be actiony that I did like, and I don't know, man. I'm sure I could think of some, but I just don't think I'm a real big fan of action movies. And I would consider this more of an action movie. Yes, there was a lot of story behind the characters, but or the main character.
When it gets mindless action, like, dude, I love Transformers, the toys, and I love the cartoons, but like a Transformers type movie where it's Michael Bay style, like every split second, different camera angle, action, that's to me is mindless action. I don't like them either. Like, yeah. Slow it down and have a plot. Like, let's be human about this. That's how I feel a movie should be.
Rambo.
I only watched Rambo once, to be honest.
I watched it a bunch as a kid because I always would play, you know, quotes, war. We'd always play war in the neighborhood, you know, dress up. And so, but I don't know. I don't think I honestly can say maybe Rambo First Blood.
Yeah.
I could get into anything after that.
Oh, I agree.
But you know, I mean, it got a little.
I think I'm more of a fan of comedies and action. Those two genres, I think, pull me in more. And I don't know why. Because they're nothing alike. One has men with no shirts on. One makes fun of men with no shirts on.
And Top Gun, and just right in the pocket there in the middle.
Top Gun is in its own category. The category we will not do.
Top Gun is going to be like the dog movie of this podcast. The movie you guys will make fun of all the time, we'll never do, and I will always want to do.
I'll tell you what. If we are lucky enough to make it to episode 100, we will do Top
Gun. All right. Top Gun for episode 100. 2 years.
That's right. A deal. No, we're going to do – I'm going to make Sean do 3 episodes a week now. let's get to that number.
Yeah, my wife will be – thrilled about that. You're going up again, doing another podcast.
Steve wants to hear Top Gun. Like, that's what you just tell her.
You know, she wants to get the Top Gun before 2014. You know, I aim to please. So yeah, episode 100 will be Top Gun if we make it that far.
Sweet.
But this was a fun movie. It was. Do I feel bad that I never saw the whole thing? No, I don't. Oh, as a kid,
you should a little bit.
No, I mean, and a lot of parts I was like, yeah, I did. I remember walking in and seeing that or whatever, but I don't know. It just didn't really appeal to me. And I wouldn't even say a kid. I mean, 89 was it?
I'll say it did appeal to me partially, I think, because I honestly, God, was a big fan of Bruce Willis on television and Moonlighting.
Me too, man.
I just thought that show was so funny, so... I don't know. I mean, I don't know what about that show I liked, but I know I really liked that. And when I saw he was doing a movie, I was like, I have to watch this movie.
Was this his first big movie after Moonlighting? Like, he wasn't a movie star before that, was he?
Well, didn't he? When was it Blind Date he was on with? Was it Kim Basinger?
Oh, that's
I don't even remember that.
Yeah, where he like takes her out and she ends up getting drunk. And the guy from Night Court was like her ex-fiance or ex-boyfriend or something.
Yeah, John Larroquette.
From Stripes. Yeah.
I will say I don't believe this was his first movie, but I do believe this was his first big movie.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. This has definitely got to be what really made him.
It does look like Blind Date was 87, Die Hard was 88.
Good call. I used to watch Moonlighting with my mom and my brother, so I have some fondness for that show. I couldn't tell you one thing that happened in it, but I remember Bruce Willis was cool in it.
You know what? I mean, the same thing. Like, I can't really remember what it was about, but I do remember it was him and what was the girl's?
Sybil Shepherd.
Nice.
Yeah, I do remember.
Well, I remember that, but the only thing I remember about that show, Booger was on it. Booger?
What?
Booger from
Revenge of the Nerds?
Revenge of the Nerds was his secretary's. Not boyfriend, but he wanted to be her boyfriend.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
All right, it's coming back to me now. That's one, Sean, that you pull up on your netbook and watch at work.
Oh, yeah.
Moonlighting?
Yeah, Moonlighting.
I need to get back to Fletcher Friday.
It it was a little bit
Moonlighting Monday.
To be honest, Sean, the closest TV series I would relate Moonlighting to would probably be Magnum PI, because it was a little bit actiony, a little bit story-y. Yeah.
I don't know. I'll be the judge of that. I'll have to check and see if it's on Netflix. And then maybe, like Steve said, we'll do Moonlighting Monday. Because I do Fletcher, or I used to do Fletcher Friday. I haven't done it in a few weeks. I would send these guys, I would take a picture. I take a netbook to work and I'll watch stuff on break. And on Fridays, I would watch Murder, She Wrote. I'd take a couple episodes of Murder, She Wrote It. And so I would take a picture every Friday, and we use this application called Voxer, where we kind of can, it's kind of like a push to talk application. You can do voice and text and pictures. And every Friday at lunch, I would take a picture and be like, it's Fletcher Friday. And I would get a nice picture of Jessica Fletcher.
And I can't believe that you admit this publicly. You have some guts there, Sean.
Because it's okay. Because I think I'll be more accepted with this podcast and this audience than, I don't get anything from AAA actually either, Android FX, no. Our other show, except for from you guys.
That's right. And, so, you know, deserved.
So you say.
Is this true? Because I never watched an episode of Murder, She Wrote, so I know not of what I speak.
Exactly. Yeah. So yeah, let's jump into this Die Hard movie. Because it was the movie of the week, and that's what we got to do. So we're gonna so to start this off, I think the movie has a nice build up of relationships here, of the characters. We got John McClane, who's our main character. And then we have Holly McClane, or Holly Gennaro, which she goes by, which we find out.
Miss Holly Gennaro.
Or if you look at the computer, it starts off as Gennaro, and then after she clicks it, the A turns into an E, and it becomes Gennaro.
Really?
Yeah.
I didn't pick up on that.
Well, we find out that he's flying to L.A. I believe it's L.A. he's flying to it's Christmas Eve. And he's flying out there from New York. He's a New York cop. And so he's flying out to see his wife and kids who are living out there now. So we pretty much, we find out they're separated. They're getting divorced. I don't think they're officially divorced yet. Excuse me.
Very, very hot stewardess on that plane with that look she gave him as he's getting off with the bear.
Oh, yeah.
He's getting ready for the bachelor life again. You could tell by that, because he was thinking about it.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, yeah, exactly. That was a telling scene. He even gave it a look back.
Yeah. And then he kind of gave that Bruce Willis smirk, you know. He kind of amused himself.
Yeah.
But so, yeah, he's going to meet them. But before he meets up with his wife, he gets picked up by his limo driver, which does play, I'd say, a minor role in this movie, more so towards the end. Argyle, right? That's his name?
Yeah.
Argyle.
You're very quick, Sean. Very quick.
Yeah. and that's the thing. Argyle is just, he's like one nosy dude.
Well, you know, he used to be a cab driver, thus you always talk to people.
I love Argyle. I love that he was so direct with John. Like, what did your wife beat you up, man? What's going on? Talk to me. I love that about him. He was really a friendly type guy.
Oh, he annoyed me.
What?
Yeah, he annoyed me. I would be the same way. I would be like, just drive, man.
Really?
I'm just
but
saying.
He, you know, but when he offered like to pull in the garage and like,
okay, yeah. By then, yeah, at that part. But in the beginning, like you could tell, you know, John didn't know. He didn't.
Of course,
he really didn't want to get into it.
Sure.
And he was very pushy. But you're right. He does say, "Look, this," because that was his first day as a limo driver. And he does say, you know, I used to be a cab driver. People wanted a little chit chat or whatever. So. But so yeah, that's Argyle, and like I said, he does play a part in the movie, as we find out. And he is very cool. He drops him off, he even offers him a place to stay, I think, if things don't work out with Holly.
You say we call a hotel.
All right, yeah. So and then he's gonna wait for him. And so this was kind of a kicker, because John McClane goes into what is it, Nakatomi?
Yeah.
building, mm-hmm. the Nakatomi building, and he's, you know, he's looking for his wife, and there's like the computer guide or whatever directory, and he can't find her name, Holly McLean, and he ends up finding that she's going by her maiden name. So that right there has got to be that's a kicker to him. You know, they're not even divorced yet.
Oh yeah, that is definitely a kick in the teeth.
Yeah, she's already using her maiden name already. So, there's a cut scene to her, and she's actually calling her house and talking to her maid, which, not to be stereotypical, but she like completely totally reminded me. I don't know if you watch Family Guy, but there's a maid on Family Guy. Just the way she would talk, I don't know. She just really, I was thinking Family Guy. I guess that probably comes off bad, but
maybe they got the idea for that character from that movie.
They very well could mm-hmm. have.
She tells her to make up a spare room.
Yeah, because she doesn't know what's going to happen.
And then hangs up on her. She goes, "What would I do without you, Paulina?" Slam on the phone. Like no goodbye or anything. It cracks me up in movies when they do that stuff like that.
Yeah. Well, yeah, because she wants, you know, in the back of her mind, she's not even sure if he's going to get there, right?
Right.
So she's calling to make sure not even asking like the John call or anything. She's asking if Mr. McLean calls. So she's talking about him. Right. Like the way she's talking about him, it's not very personable.
Well, yeah, that was the thing. They were trying to set the precedent that she is a very business-focused woman. That's what I gathered.
Yeah.
Yeah, and we find that out when he finally does, he finds her, and the security guard tells him what floor there's a party going on.
Well, that's the whole thing. Here's the whole thing. He told
her. I know
what
you're gonna say, dude. I thought the same thing.
He told
Go ahead, Dor.
Him to look him up in the directory. There's nothing else going on in the building. The building's closed. There's a party on the 30th floor, and that's it. So that whole scene was just so he could see that she's not using her.
I know
the marriage.
Yeah,
but it was,
and John didn't even say anything to the guy. Like, why didn't you tell me that 5 minutes ago, boss?
Exactly.
Yeah, that was funny. Well, I remember.
And there should be.
Oh, they're the only ones left in the building. Oh, thanks a lot.
Right. See, and this is the kind of thing I was talking to the guys before. We need to come up with a term for these kind of things. It wouldn't happen in real life like this. John would have turned to him and said, "Why did you just make me look it up? If you know there's a party on the 30th floor and that's the only thing going on, what's wrong with you?"
Yeah, it was definitely noticeable how they were setting up that scene like that.
Yeah.
And when he does get up there, even before he gets up there, there's that guy Ellis. Man, that guy Ellis that she worked with, real
dude.
Slimy.
And as soon as they walk in the room, he's snorting coke
on her desk.
On her desk.
But even before that, though, he's like. Totally hitting on her, you know, and she's like, no.
Exactly.
No, thanks. You know, he's a slime ball.
Yes, he is.
And oh, I hate let me tell you something. Like
I hate him too. He is so slimy.
That was good casting because I believed he was a slime ball.
Yeah. And then he shakes McLean's hand with the hand that he wipes the coke off the desk with.
Yep. And all that John says to him is, "You missed a spot."
Yeah. Yeah. That was definitely, and even that
was. Is that what he said?
Yeah.
Yeah, he said you missed a little bit or something like that, because he's a cop. He knew what he was doing.
Yeah,
I thought he said I missed something, like because he said I heard so much about you, and I thought he was saying to Holly I missed something about him, or he was saying to him that I missed. Anyway, forget it. Now I understand that part better. Yeah. Continue.
Yeah, so that was pretty. Messed up that part too, and he's in his wife's office to boot. I mean, even that would, I'd be like, why is this dude in here? But anyways, so she comes in and they reunite, and again, this kind of plays a big part I think in the end of the movie is now Ellis is like totally being a slime bag in front of John, you know, show him the watch we got you.
Yeah,
it's a Rolex.
It's a Rolex.
You know. Cause he knows he's a policeman and he probably figures, you know, he's not making what we make here. And, you know, and he show the Rolex, you know, she's like, he'll see it later, which we do.
Yeah.
I like that after watching it, twice, I was like, ooh, okay. I'm catching the little hints there, but,
yeah, I missed that too. Damn.
Yeah. Being a fan of early David Letterman, he was the first guy that made me aware of the comeback. how they would bring something up and then later bring it up again, but there was the link back. And that yeah. and that watch is the perfect comeback because
I totally missed that.
I mean, geez. For like an hour and 20 minutes, no mention of it, no showing of it, no reference of it, and then bam, there it is again.
That's awesome. I didn't even know that.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. I didn't notice it till the second time that I watched it.
But I watched it like 50 times. I should have got that.
Well,
thanks. Well, what, Dor? Well, what?
I don't know. I was going to say, let's move on. Well, the one comment I got to say is, I believed John was genuinely trying to be nice to her, and Helen was trying to be genuinely nice to him there for a while. And it felt like, you know, why are
we... Who's Helen?
Was her name Helen?
Holly,
sorry. I thought they were genuinely being nice to one another, and it was like, why are they getting broken up? You know what I mean?
Well, I think too, though, I mean, because we find out, you know, she kind of left there. It wasn't... I think what happened, the feeling I was getting was, you know, because he even says he's got all these cases there or whatever back in New York. And I think they both were kind of like, thought their job was more important.
Yeah.
You know? And obviously she says you had a different idea of what our marriage was anyways.
Yeah. Well, when they were talking, he was in the bathroom cleaning up. When their moods changed, they changed on a dime and they started attacking one another.
I can't remember. I think he told Argyle in the limo how long she had been out there. So you figure
6 months.
Okay, so you figure it's been 6 months since they actually seen each other. It's Christmas Eve, so I think their initial, you know, interaction with each other would be a more peaceful.
Yeah,
and she even
said she missed him, and he you could tell he missed her.
Yeah.
Oh, absolutely. But then once the guards get let down, you know, then they start. Yeah. Getting those feelings out of.
Yeah. It was like a fight that just continued on from where it left off before.
Yeah. But I think while this is going on, just previous to this, we kind of see now when, and I'm going to call him the terrorist for now, kind of starting to come to the building.
Before we go there, Sean, I know you want to keep the flow up, but there's two things that I wrote down here that I wanted to just like talk about
Cool.
about before the terrorist got there. Number one, I love when John McClane walked into that party. I loved his facial expressions and the way he was just like looking around and like so out of his element. And then that guy came up and kissed him. I loved that. That was so funny.
He was like, whoa, and California.
And he's always like, California. So I just wanted to remark on that. I enjoyed like this time around, I enjoyed watching him like enter that room and enter that party.
Yeah, he handled that like someone that, you know,
from New York.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. Even when he got off the plane and the girl jumps in the guy's arms and she's like mauling the guy and he just kind of looks at him and he's just like, I think he says California at that point too.
Yeah. I think he might have said effing California.
Let me tell you something. This might have been the movie with the most F-bombs at the time this movie was made. There was a lot.
Huh. Yippee-ki-yay.
Exactly.
You'll have to go back and watch and count.
No.
There's probably, I bet you there's a website that.
I'm sure there is.
That has
plus, there was all kinds of smoking in public places, like at the baggage claim.
In the airport, baggage claim.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was pretty weird. I remember when my parents would smoke at the mall. That was weird.
Yeah. I remember going into my mom's work and like the top 3 feet of the whole building, like every floor was just. Solid smoke.
Yeah, and there's smoke everywhere. I don't remember going anywhere.
Right, smoke everywhere. But I think that is what happens, though. You kind of see these guys coming to the Nakatomi building and getting ready to set up and do their invasion because we have John and Holly having their little argument about what happened. With the relationship and like we were just saying, the true feelings are kind of coming to a head and she gets pulled away to give a speech. And I believe we get a cut to or somewhere around this time. I had a problem with this scene. This is when we get Carl, who is one of the group of terrorists or whatever. We find out that they're not actually terrorists, but this guy Carl and Theo.
Theo.
They come in talking, and they just go up and they just, boom, shoot the security guard.
And you had a problem with this?
I have a problem because I thought what could have been better about this movie, they obviously studied everything about the Nakatomi building.
Yeah.
Where everything is located. I thought it would have been cooler if the guy, the security desk guy, was actually in on it. You know what I'm saying? Like he was a plant. I was like, man, if that guy would have just been the actual guy that John talked to and whatever, and he was been working there maybe for this isn't something that they just were like, hey, we're going to rob the Nakatomi building in the safe. They obviously, you would think there was some kind of backstory where they took 5, 6, 7, 8 months to a year to really scope out what was going on there and all the ins and outs of everything, because they knew where everything was.
I agree. Yeah, that,
you know,
that
so I think sense. It would have been cool if that security guard actually would have been one of them. I don't know. It's just
that would have been cool.
Yeah,
but I'll tell you what, you didn't like Argyle. I immediately hated Theo and hated him throughout the movie.
Yeah, I liked Theo either.
I'm sorry, I thought he was good casting.
It was great casting. I don't think he did a bad job of acting. I just hated his personality.
The character was.
Well, I'm not going to say I liked or hated his personality. I didn't think about it. I just thought his personality fit the role. Finally, and here's it, because I'm a dork. Finally, a computer hacker guy in a movie who was doing what he said he could do, and he was cocky about it.
Yeah.
Yeah, but...
and being a dork, that's what I liked.
Yeah, it was great casting. I thought he played the part awesome. I just hated him.
But yeah, and I guess you know what? We're really not supposed to like these guys anyways,
true,
right?
True.
I don't know. I kind of liked Hans a little bit. He is kind of likable.
Yeah.
In parts.
Well, except for the whole killing thing.
In parts.
I know, but like then in parts, you're like, you almost like him a little bit. You really do.
Well, you're about to meet him because they call Holly away to give a speech. And that's when John's in the room by himself and he's kind of thinking about things or whatever. And then this is basically when everything happens. Well,
I loved right before this whole thing went down, you saw him in the room with his shoes off, making his toes into fist.
Right.
Because the guy on the plane said that's how you alleviate airplane stress. And he was in the room making his toes into a fist. And he was like, huh, it works.
Hence, he was barefoot.
Exactly. And that's, I liked that tie back because that was a quick one, but that was the excuse for him being shoeless for the rest of the movie, which turned out to be a very important part of the movie.
It was very cool that they did that actually.
Yeah.
It was definitely, I think it was a cool part throughout the whole movie, like him being barefoot and everything. It definitely added something different. And it plays into that, or Hans does, I guess, later on in the movie, recognizes that.
Right.
You know,
when he was being Bill Clay.
Yeah. So we get these guys that come in, Hans comes in, just start shooting up the place, getting everyone's attention, right? Things are getting all crazy. So John's kind of seeing there's really nothing he can do as a police officer. He wants to do something, but he knows he can't do anything right now against all these guys. And, so he ends up splitting up the stairwell going up. And
he got very lucky because in the room next door, when they kicked the door in, there was a topless chick, which immediately drew all the terrorist eyeballs.
Right.
So, the robber / terrorist. So when that happened, he was able to slip through to the stairway. And I like the fact that you didn't see him do it.
Yeah, right.
You know, they left you guess. Is he still in the room or did he make it?
Right.
And then he starts like venturing up higher in the building, which is still under construction.
But why would he go up?
Well, because he wants to get to the roof.
I would have went down. That's just me.
He didn't need to go to the roof yet. He didn't know where he was going. He was getting the hell out of there.
Yeah, I think he was.
That's a good point, Dor.
Hightailing it out.
But Sean, I cannot find the notes. Did you share them with me?
No, I forgot.
Okay. All right. Sorry.
You're on your own, pal.
Okay, cool. I'll follow.
That everything starts getting crazy. And then Hans, kind of, we find out that Hans Gruber is the head of all this stuff. He's the man in charge. We find out that they're basically robbers, or what does he say?
Exceptional thieves.
Exceptional.
Yeah. So he tells him that now he's looking for, Mr. Takanomi.
Yeah.
Right. Cause he's the one.
Takagi.
Yeah. I'm mixing up the building. I'm trying to send you my notes here as we're talking.
Don't worry about it, man. Don't worry about it.
Go ahead, Dora.
No, I have to say, this is another sign of how much research that he did do, because he knew this guy's complete history from like high school.
Yeah, and he didn't know what he looked like. Weird is that? Yeah.
Back then, I guess pictures were less common, where today, I'm sure you could just go to Nakanomi.jp and you'll see a picture of him, but not back then.
Exactly. It was only this last showing where I realized that he knew all these facts, but he didn't know what he looked like. Yeah. That's kind of weird. But you're right. It's like, it's not the internet age.
Well, that was the only thing I could assume, because I don't know either.
And there was no such thing as cameras or TV back then either.
No, it was too far ago, though. And there was no cell phones.
Right. All right.
And he wants to get him because he wants to be able to, they need it because they're there to rob the safe. Or the vault, yeah. And there's so many barriers or
so many different locks
that they got to get through. And one of them, he needs like the passcode. He wants the passcode. And I think that's actually, isn't that the first one that he needs the passcode for or something?
Mm-hmm.
Yep. And so they pull him aside and he pretty much tells him like, there's nothing he can do. And
do you think he was lying?
Yeah.
No, you do.
And then he was like, you're just going to have to shoot me.
Yeah. And because he was the first kill. He didn't see them kill anybody else. So he was trying to pull their bluff, right?
I think, yes.
I think so, too. And he found out.
Yeah, I thought it was genuine that he just really did not know what it was. But yeah, then he kills him. And John is somewhere around there where he sees it. Doesn't he see that happen?
He's underneath under a table. The desk that had the big bridge model on it.
The Indonesia project.
Yes. Yes. And what I found interesting was you actually saw John change from the beginning to the end of the movie, because when that shot went off, he genuinely flinched and he had almost a look of fear in him. Like, oh my God, he just shot. And of course, by the end of the movie, you know, C4 could have went off 3 feet from him and he wasn't going to budge.
Yeah.
That's true.
Yeah, he knew he was, this was some serious stuff that was going on. This was no joke.
Yeah. And he had to wake up and just be alert, like, and on guard.
Yeah, and after
that point.
And he ends up this is when he ends up getting out of there and pulling a fire alarm, cuz he's trying to think of how he can get help there.
And that was smart in my book. I don't know if I would have thought of that. Because he first went and tried a phone, which they already cut the phone lines and they were doing something to him. Carl's brother was doing something to the phone lines. I don't even know what he was supposed to do.
He was trying to patch into him somehow.
I don't know either. I don't know either.
Well, and another thing didn't make any sense. It looked like they shut off the elevators from the ground through 30, yet they were running from ground to 30 later in the movie. But that makes no sense. He went and tried the phone. It was dead. And then he thought for a couple seconds. And that was one of the things I liked. They actually showed in the movie. Him sitting there saying, think, John, think, think, think. And then he went and he saw the fire alarm and pulled it. I don't know if I would have thought of that.
Well, if you would have said think, think, think to yourself a couple times, you would have.
There you go. See, that's what I've been missing all these years. Think, Dora, think.
I'll kiss your Dalmatian. Is that what he said?
Yes.
Or I'll get you a Dalmatian.
I think he said, I'll kiss your Dalmatian.
Yeah, and they're alarmed now that someone's pulled the fire alarm, and they kind of, so Hans has, I think Theo or somebody call the fire department, kind of take care of it. Because they're coming, and then he sees them, and then they turn around, and they're gone.
Yeah.
And Hans realized it didn't, he realized it came from another floor, or he wanted to know where it came from, and that was a smart move by Hans.
Yeah.
Yeah, and
it took him like a second, and he stopped and said, what floor was that alarm on?
And then Hans sends somebody to find him. I don't remember who it was. I think it was Carl's brother.
Yes.
Yes.
But I can't remember what his name was for the life of me. But it's not right because he's not going to stick around anyways.
Exactly.
For long. You know, he finds where John's at and they end up having a little exchange.
See, I want to say, okay. Never mind. Good. I didn't know if he was the first one up, but he wasn't by himself. He was with somebody else, wasn't he?
He was by himself.
Okay. He was by himself. And they end up getting into a scuffle. He ends up breaking his neck, doesn't he? As they're falling down the stairs or something.
It was a great move. He lured them into the one room by turning on a saw, whatever those saws are called.
Because a couple of the floors, like we said, are still being under construction. Yeah.
So and then he didn't want to kill him. He tried to elbow him in the face, but this guy was – all he wanted to do was kill McClane. So, and yeah, they fell down the stairs, broke his neck, but it broke something.
Yeah.
Dude was dead.
He was dead. Now, is this when he gets the detonators?
No. This is where he got the C4.
Okay, yeah, C4 and a machine gun because he sends him down in the elevator.
Ho, ho, ho. Now I have a machine gun.
I love that.
Steve, this is your favorite part. And what you're going to talk about, I remembered today when I rewatched.
Oh, really? Did you see it?
Yes, I was waiting for it.
All right, so when he sends down, whatever his name is, Marco, Carl's brother, he puts the Santa hat on him and writes, now I have a machine gun, ho, 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 on his shirt. And Hans, when the elevator opens and Hans goes to see him, in the last part of that scene, Hans takes his hand and tries to like push his head a little bit, just to make sure he was dead or whatever. And this dude actually blinked and flinched if you watch real close, and he's supposed to be dead. So it was, and they didn't edit that out. So, but since I brought that up, when I first saw that, I caught that on my own, and I'm like, am I the only person in the world who saw this? I doubt it. So I Googled it. I don't know exactly what I Googled, but I Googled that scene of Die Hard, and I found a website that all they do is like try to find all the errors made in movies like that. And I started reading all the ones that these other people were finding in Die Hard, and there's like maybe 20.
Wow.
And I can't remember the name of the site. I have to figure it out because it was a really entertaining site. It was really cool finding about all these errors. But that's where I found out about the error about Holly Gennaro being, when he hit the computer, it was Gennaro, and then it turned into an E. That was from the site. That wasn't from me.
See,
so
I ain't gonna lie. I kind of, especially a movie I like, I would like to watch the movie after reading all that just to be like, you know, I'm like now on the in crowd of this movie. I'm seeing these.
Exactly.
Things.
Yeah. Yeah. It is pretty cool like that.
Do you have any more? Or are those the only two that you remembered?
I could say them. Yeah, there was one where they were shooting the rocket launcher out at the police car.
Yeah,
and they broke the same window twice. Like when they shot the first rocket, they broke the glass, and then the second rocket they shot, they had to break the same exact window, which was should have been already broken. Well, no, it was on the site. I know. I didn't pick on up a lot of this stuff.
Yeah, but you picked up on the eyeball one, and I didn't notice that until you had mentioned it the other day to us. So when I was rewatching it today at work, and that part came up, and I was like, all right, I'm going to watch. I got to see this part.
Well, did you
and
notice?
It's blatant.
Okay, there was another thing that I got really annoyed by, and it was literally at this scene or right after this scene. When he was in the elevator, dead body, ho, ho, ho. John was on top of the elevator. He then called for Carl to come down. The elevator started to go up. It's obviously going to pick up Carl, okay? John rides the elevator to the top, and when it stops at the top, he gets off. Instead of looking through the roof and shooting Carl on the top of the head when he walks in the elevator, he hops off the elevator and runs.
See, I took it differently when he's sitting on the elevator with his brother dead in it, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And then he called for Carl to come and see. And then he looks over and can see the elevator to his left coming down. So the elevator's coming down. But then all of a sudden, now the elevator that John McClane's on is going up. But his brother, unless they pulled him out, I guess they would have taken him out of there.
They should have, but I don't know if they did.
But yeah, Carl was coming down in a different elevator. Because he was still looking for John as well when this all went on. But then that's how John gets to the top, which brings us to our next little bit here is when he goes on the roof now, because he has the walkie-talkie, he's got a machine gun now, he's got C4, and he's going now. He's gone on the roof because he thinks that's the best way for him to contact outside of this space of just the Nakatomi building to get a hold of somebody. And as he's calling on a CB, he's picking up, or he's been picked up by like dispatch or something,
right?
And they're just like, you know, blowing him off like it's nothing,
right?
I love
this
that.
This channel is for emergencies only. If you have whatever emergency, call 911.
He's like, no crap. Does it sound like I'm ordering a pizza?
Right. Which yeah, I gotta say, I like that line.
Well, I mean, just the way he was talking to him, you would think they would have sent somebody out there.
I guess he was. Hey, that's California. I guess I don't know.
Well, they did say that. Oh, that's the place where they had the crank call, so they were suspicious.
Yeah, true. For the fire. Yeah, okay. Well, then Carl, I believe, ends up there as well with a couple other guys.
Yeah.
Because they can intercept his radio frequency. They all have the walkie-talkies going, and they know that someone's up on the roof. They sent him up there. We have a nice little shootout chase. They're shooting at John.
They didn't know he was on the roof. That was a hunch.
Well, yeah, though that was Hans.
Hans again.
He was like the best place.
Where's the
to
best
go
place to transmit from?
Yeah. And then he's like, the roof. Because he is, I mean, there's a reason why he's in charge. The guy definitely is a thinker, always trying to think ahead of what's going on, has his plan down. So he sends them up there to look for him. And we have a shootout, and this is when dispatch can, I think they hear the gunfire. So they're going to send a black and white over to investigate.
And this is where we're introduced to who they call Al, who I will call for the rest of my life, Carl. Because this is the same actor from Family Matters who played a cop, and in the TV show, his name was Carl. So forever he's known as Carl, but in this movie, his name was Al.
I know him as Al because I didn't watch Family Matters, but I knew he was on that show.
Did I do that?
Exactly. Man, that show was horrible.
Yeah, but I remember watching it quite a bit.
Same here.
So he gets away from these guys on the roof. He kind of gets escapes, and here's one part that I was kind of like, oh man, this is cheesy. Where John kind of uses the machine gun that he has, the strap, to like he wedges the machine gun in an elevator door.
Yeah,
and he's like hanging down the elevator shaft by the strap, and it's just like a typical action movie, I guess, where you see the strap slowly getting pulled shorter and shorter, or longer on his end,
right,
which means it's shorter in the latch, and he's trying to like get to another floor or something, and it ends up giving. And
yeah, and he like supposedly is falling at least 10-12 feet and magically has the strength of, I don't know, Thor, to reference a comic movie, and grabs an edge and stops himself from falling.
And not only was he falling 10-12 feet, if you look, he was falling away from the wall. That's what I didn't like. Yeah. It wasn't like he was kind of sliding down the wall. He was falling into the middle of the shaft. And then the very next scene, his fingertips are holding him up.
Yeah.
I didn't like that.
Yeah, and now he's crawling through a ventilator shaft.
Yeah, I'll say, as much as I didn't like that, I loved this scene. Because this scene is ingrained in my skull of him pulling out the Zippo lighter that he got from Carl's brother that he killed. And he's lighting up in the shaft, crawling through, looking down. He says, come out to California, we'll have some laughs. Yeah. And it's like that scene is ingrained in my head.
Yeah. And then he says, now I know what a TV dinner feels like.
Yeah. There was definitely good shots in this movie, I think. The way it was filmed.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
It was definitely filmed really well.
Really well.
And as when he first gets in the air duct and he lights that lighter, Carl can see him. He's looking down the elevator shaft, so he knows he's somewhere around there, which then they kind of run down floors and they're doing the old, you know, he knows he's in the ductwork somewhere and he's pushing up on the ductwork.
Yeah.
Real slow with his machine gun. Yeah.
That was a great scene.
Yeah.
That
After he shot it all up and barely missed John with a bullet.
I'll say, as much as they pushed Hans as being the smart guy of the group, Carl's definitely the methodical, careful killer of the group.
Yeah.
Where he doesn't overstretch himself to where he dies, but he's like lingering around that edge. He knows how not to go too far to put himself in real danger, you know, but he was right there, right? He was literally 3.5 feet from John with his tip of his gun.
Yeah. Yeah. I liked Carl's character. He was a real good character.
Yeah. And I was like, man, I knew this guy from somewhere. I could not place him. And for some reason I was thinking it was the guy from Real Genius, the blonde in Real Genius. that was a real jerk. And I can't remember the character's name.
This guy was in the Money Pit, wasn't he?
But he was in the Money Pit. He was like the musician.
Conductor.
The conductor, yeah, of Shelley Long's orchestra.
The movie where I remember him from is Witness, where he played an Amish guy.
I don't know.
Oh, yeah.
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 I don't recall that one. But yeah, I definitely knew I knew this guy from somewhere.
And Kelly McGillis was in Witness, who was also in Top Gun.
I don't know.
All right, but go ahead. Go ahead, Sean.
Yeah, we'll move on. That's the cue to move on, though. So they end up leaving. I think Hans calls Carl and all the boys back, pulls in the dogs, and John gets out of there. And then he sees that there's actually the cop is coming to the cop is coming to check out, to investigate. They call this Al. He's in, you know, getting some treats or whatever. Twinkies. And he takes a ride over.
Twinkies.
He's getting his Twinkies, and he takes a ride over. So then John sees him pulling up, and he comes in. He kind of investigates, and the security guard, who is not the security guard, you know, they're all ready to kill him.
Oh, yeah.
Pretty much, but he just is like, there's nothing here, and he takes off.
I like that security guard. He was another good character, I thought.
Yeah,
for some reason I liked him. I don't know why.
He's like Huey Lewis or something.
Thank you.
Yeah, he was like Huey Lewis.
But so Al's like taking off, and this is when John's gonna, you know, get his attention, mm-hmm. which he does, and I think he just they went way overboard
a little.
Way overboard.
What do you mean? Why?
Well, because he throws one of the I don't even know who it is now. We probably missed something, but somebody gets killed. One of the terrorist guys gets killed, and he.
I can tell you what we missed. It's the scene where the guy comes in the door. John tells him, "Put the gun down. Put the gun down. Put the gun down." Carl's brother comes from behind him.
All right. Yeah.
I'm pretty sure it's Carl's brother. Then the one guy falls, he shoots, and then he goes under the zigzag table, and the guy says, next time you have the chance to kill somebody, you should do it. And McLean's like, doo, 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 doo. Thanks for the advice. And I'm pretty sure it was that guy. I think he threw out the window.
Yes, it was.
And I think that may be the guy we got the detonators from as well, right? I'm all about the detonators, which play a big part, but I can't remember it.
That does sound right.
This movie had a lot going on.
Oh yeah,
a lot going on. So,
Hans wanted the detonators too, man. Don't feel bad about it.
Yeah, I did the best I could with my notes here. So he takes him and throws him out on Al's car.
Yeah, and that was a great camera angle because you were like down in the crack, dare I say, of Al's seat where you could look up through the windshield, and you saw. Like this body come out of nowhere, and it was only like 8 feet, 10 feet above the window by the time that you saw it, and it came like crashing into the windshield.
I love that.
Yeah,
but okay, that's fine. But does he really need? So now he's shooting at Al's car with a machine gun.
No, it wasn't John shooting. It was the terrorists or the exceptional thieves.
Exceptional thieves. Yeah, there was like three or four of them shooting at him like crazy.
Yep.
Was
I thought
it?
So too. Yeah. The first million times I watched, I thought McLean was shooting at his car. I'm like, dude, you could kill him.
Because,
but it wasn't him. It was the other guys.
There was at least three terrorists on a similar floor watching him just like John was watching him. And they were begging to just let me take him out. Let me take him out. And once they saw the body fall, open season. And they just started to shoot away. And Al freaked out, slammed it in reverse. I mean... If there was...
You're turning my car into Swiss cheese.
Yeah, if there was school kids behind Al, he would have killed him because he just went off like a rocket in reverse.
You know, I got to watch that over. I didn't catch that. I could have sworn it was John McClane.
I had to rewind that part to verify.
What's that?
I rewound that part a couple times to verify that.
All right, I'll take your word for it. so
So, he doesn't believe us, Stuart.
I know. Some of us don't need notes. We have it kind of right here.
No. All right, then. I need my notes.
I'm just messing. That was a really good scene, but I will say it was over. It was too much for him to throw an entire dead body on his through his windshield. That was a bit dramatic. Just breaking the window and shooting would have been enough.
And if it did play out the way you guys are saying it did, then I can look at that scene differently.
But that's why I asked you why you thought it.
Yeah, because when I'm watching, I'm like, this is like he's gonna kill him. Mm-hmm. I mean, he's just tearing up the car. But
I know.
Anyways, that gives justification to bring in some real backup. And so we get like the whole LAPD or whatever that comes there pretty much. There's a ton of cops that come.
There was at least, I would say, 20 cop cars.
Yeah, there's a ton. And, you know, I think that that's when John and Al start kind of talking. They kind of have their little conversations throughout the movie because Al is kind of it's John's voice to the rest of the police officers.
Right. Well,
specifically Dwayne Robertson, who's...
I love that. He had some great lines and great scenes with him.
Time-wise, right before this scene was when John introduced himself to Hans as Roy Rogers. So when Al asked John what his name was, he said, why don't you call me Roy? So for like half of the rest of the movie, Al kept calling him Roy.
Yeah. And we find out that like Al kind of can gather from different things of John, that John is a police officer. He doesn't tell anybody that.
Well, he didn't need to. Cops know cops. You know what I mean? And he insinuated, I've seen my fair share of fake IDs and other things that made Al think, oh, he's a cop.
And he's a good cop. He's thinking that way because the chief of police or whatever he was, the head guy,
Lieutenant
Dwayne Robertson.
Deputy, I want to say.
Dwayne T. Robinson. Robertson or Robertson?
Robertson.
Dwayne T. Robertson.
He was the principal in The Breakfast Club. Another douchebag.
You're right.
Character that he plays. Oh, so he plays this character quite well.
Yes, he did.
And he wants, he doesn't even want to listen to Alice, and he just thinks that John McClane is just like either a terrorist, because they still think they're terrorists at this point, or he's just a nuisance, getting in the way. He's not helping him. He's making it worse, you know. So he doesn't want to hear anything. Where Al is kind of like, wait a minute, man. I'm talking to this guy. And like you said, they have a few conversations through the rest of this movie. It's kind of his voice between the two of them. So.
Right.
So yeah, they come, and he wants to send the SWAT team in.
Yeah.
So they're like all setting up and everything.
Yeah.
And
dumb move.
We're going in.
Real dumb move. Real dumb move. And he's like, he's got like a whole bunch of guys flanking on the left, which, they're running through the bushes, these SWAT guys. And did you pick up the one guy?
He
like,
cut his hand on a thorn bush.
Yeah, he like pricked his finger on a thorn bush. He's like, ow. Yeah. I was like, that is great, man.
There's a couple scenes in the movie like that where they threw something in there that's just funny or just kind of out of place. And I don't know. They did it a couple times in this movie.
It was almost like... they were trying to like portray the LAPD as just
underprepared, really your typical SWAT people, you know,
boneheads.
Yeah, yeah, and I love the fact that when they were coming in, Hans was like, "Fine, don't kill them, just scare them a little bit." You know, that's confidence.
Yeah. Yeah. Send in the car.
Yeah.
And then
even a dumber move because the car couldn't even make it up the like 8 steps that were in front of the building. Which those same 8 steps weren't in front of the building any other time in the movie. I'm just saying.
I didn't notice that. But yeah.
They came in the back though, door. In 2x2 standard formation.
Exactly. 2x2 standard formation. I love that.
And Theo can see this armored vehicle coming from like a half a mile away on the
That's what it made it
cameras.
Seem like, yes. Because they had literally a minute and a half, it seemed like.
To drive up, yeah. Because the guys coming in, they couldn't do it. They just, Hans had his guys just kind of like wound them, pick them off a little bit.
Right, and that was one of my favorite scenes too. It was the Asian exceptional robber terrorist guy prepping for him to come in, and then he looks down and he sees there's a little gift counter full of candy. And it was like...
He pulled a Nestle Crunch. Right.
Nestle Crunch,
it was like a break from the movie. It was like a weird normal people too almost kind of thing, dare I say, where he's like looking at, oh man. And he just opens it up and he starts eating it, but he still has his gun ready. But
he must have been so hungry though, because he finished off the Nestle Crunch, and the next scene he's eating a Mars bar, and this is after he knows the SWAT team's trying to come in. He's still taking bites out of his candy bar.
That means he made the mistake, because you know, back then especially, when your appetite is poking at you, he should have had something else.
You mean he shouldn't have eaten all candy?
He should have had a Snickers, because that's what satisfies.
Would have satisfied him, yeah.
This is a scene where I hate, this is one of the scenes that makes me hate Theo even more. I hated how cool he thought when he was being all clever with 'Twas the Night Before Christmas. And then after they hit the car with the missile launcher and Theo's like, the quarterback's toast. I just wanted to reach in the screen and strangle this guy. You know, I'm rooting for the cops. And he's just like this nerdy, skinny little punch him in the face guy.
Oh, I didn't like gets his.
Yeah, I'm the same way. He drove me nuts, man. He was just like, come on, really? Like, he's supposed to be getting into the safe and everything. And you know what? Can we just go back a little bit? When he figures out the code.
I vaguely, yeah. This was one of he needed to open up the door to the vault, not the vault itself.
Yeah, he just seemed like he was just typing in like
random stuff.
Random stuff.
Yeah, and like third try, hey, he got it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know.
Oh, yeah, you're
well,
right.
This is a very, very old problem in Hollywood. Since I don't even know what the first incarnation of this was, but they never do password hacking right. They always make it seem like, well, the hacker guy knows what he's doing. You know, 3 to 5 seconds, oh, he has it, he's in. And they always show it either like the code building up to, I got the first one up, I got the second one up, I got the third one up, I got the fourth one, and now I'm in, or something like that. They always do it totally inaccurately.
What do you want to like have them show them like putting an off-crack Linux distribution CD in or something?
Well, no, I mean, that's the whole thing. They cannot do it accurately,
right?
Partially because they don't want to show people how to do it, but they don't even know how it would be done. So they just show this in random guy's face. Oh, verified. Access granted. You know.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, anyways, I just wanted to point that out because that kind of bugged me too. Because probably because I don't like the character. So it's like you're looking for things to be like, whatever.
To hate him.
I don't like, yeah, whatever. But,
well, I'll just say, so he had the good stuff. Everybody else had to have a handheld walkie talkie where he had a headset with a little mic by the side.
Yeah.
So obviously he got the good stuff. That's all I'm saying.
So this is then John McClane, because he has the plastique as a throwback to Cloak and Dagger episode and the detonators.
And that was a lot. It was literally like an 8-inch by 4-inch by 4-inch brick of C4.
Yeah, he's got a lot. And he ends up blowing up the elevator shaft.
I love that scene.
And it just, I mean, the building just looks like it's, you know, and gonna implode or something. Just smoke everywhere. Yeah. It was huge.
Killer.
Well, I know, but right before that, I loved Al pointing out to everyone when the bad guy started shooting, they're shooting out the lights. And then like three seconds later, the lights start going out. And then the deputy, whatever guy says,
just panic fire. Don't worry.
Right. Like, no. It's just panic fire. They can't say anything.
Yeah.
There goes a light. There's light. They're shooting the lights.
Yeah. And then Al gives him the look.
Yeah, because that is your typical, you know, boss guy not listening to the right worker guy thing. And it happens everywhere in every business. So we all, as normal people, understood that scene.
Yeah, you got the boss that knows everything, thinks he knows everything, and you got the hands-on worker that really is the one that's really running the show usually.
Yeah.
Making the boss look good.
Mm-hmm.
But so, yeah, he does that.
Like a 9-to-5.
Yeah. Another episode we'll be doing. And then now we get the douchey guy again, Ellis, who now he's like, he's gonna end this. He's gonna take care. He can get them. He knows that it's John that's messing stuff up. So he goes to talk to Hans.
Hans, baby.
Yeah. Booby, yeah. And just like, oh my gosh, this guy is such a creep, man. But
well, he had the courage to do it because he just sniffed some cocaine before he went in
front of everybody. He just didn't care. He got to the point where I don't care. I'm just snorting some. Let's go.
Yep, you know. Let's go. And then it's funny they brought him a Coke, too. I guess that's a tie back to his cocaine. Exactly. I just realized that.
And they poured for him. And it was kind of cool because you can hear John on listening to him talk, and you could hear the Coke being poured over the CV.
Yeah.
I thought that was kind of cool. But so Hans is using him, and he's talking to John like he's a good friend or whatever, and it ends up backfiring. And John knows. He's like, dude, don't be telling him any information. You know, he's worried that it's going to be his wife that's sitting there. You know, and he's thinking he can get John to turn himself in. Doesn't end up happening, and Hans ends up killing Ellis in the long run, which John knew was going to happen. Tried to tell him to shut up, you know.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know what Ellis thought. This cop who's been killing bad guys, well, because I'm going to go talk to him, he's going to turn himself in. I didn't understand that.
I think Ellis was so cocky, he thought he could take over the world.
Well, he said that. He's like, I make deals all the time or whatever, true. You know, multi-million dollar deals all the time, whatever. So
I could handle this Euro trash.
Yeah exactly. And he kills him, and then Hans, this is when he kind of plays into the they think we're terrorists. Where he makes the request that he wants, like, his comrades or whatever.
Asian Dawn.
Asian Dawn.
Yeah. Across the world that are being locked up and incarcerated. He wants them to be, you know, released, which is, one, buying them more time, and two, is initially going to bring the FBI into it, which he wants the FBI to be there.
Yeah. And I almost like the fact that you did not actually see Hans kill him. You heard the gunshot, and that was all you really needed to see. Now, later, like 5 minutes later, they swing the camera by the chair and you see the dead guy sitting in the chair. But you didn't actually see Hans pull a trigger. And as a viewer, it was one of those things you didn't have to see it. That was good direction as far as I'm concerned.
I know. I think in a movie nowadays, they would just
stuff flying out of the back of the head.
Yeah.
Yeah, kind of like Takagi in the beginning of the movie. His was kind of like a big splatter all over.
Right.
But again, yeah, I thought the movie was shot great. I really liked the way the movie was shot. So,
and speaking of Cloak and Dagger not having any boring scenes, this was even more so. There's not one boring scene in this movie.
There's no boring scenes, but there are scenes where the roller coaster slows down, I'll say. And they were very purposeful, very planned, but it wasn't a slow roller coaster ride. It was just now John's going to a different floor, or John's figuring something else out.
Well, there was a part that I found boring. I think we're getting to that point, but
okay.
So now the FBI gets called in, and in my notes, FBI called in, blah.
Yeah.
Hate this part. That's my notes, because I did. I couldn't stand these guys.
Well, you were supposed to hate them. They're supposed to be getting in the way.
Yeah, but they were even more buffoons than Dwayne T. Robinson.
And here's a whole ironic thing. You really think they would only bring in two people?
Had so much power. I don't know. I mean, I understand you're not supposed to like them. They come in and it's like typically in a movie or a TV show. All right, we're taking over. And then the local police get ticked off. And there's this, you know, little tension between them. I get all that. But it was Johnson and Agent Johnson. Yeah. Johnson and Johnson.
No relation.
And the white guy, Johnson, was just a total... Oh,
say it.
I couldn't stand him.
Say it.
Jerk.
Yes.
He was a total jerk. Total jerk, man. This kind of started like a downfall of stuff for me in this movie. And it kind of started with them.
Well, but then on the bright side, they die. That makes you feel any better.
It did.
Okay, good.
It did make me feel better. So now they want to check. I think Hans wants to check on the explosives and everything. So basically it's an excuse for Hans to get more involved in this movie, more so than just sitting and being the director or the captain of the ship. He kind of, now he's going out within the building because I think he wants to check on the explosives, right?
Yeah, he tells one of the guys to, I think, go to a different floor, look for McLean. I'll check on the explosives.
Right, because he wants those detonators. He needs those detonators. And so as he's out looking for them, who does he stumble upon? Or he's bent over and stands up, and there's John McLean. They have a real... They kind of have a really odd interaction at this point. And this is when, what was his name now, Steve, that he uses? He tells him his name is
Bill Clay.
Bill Clay, yeah. And I thought he played it off a little too cheesy, a little too over the top with the, no, don't kill me, you know, cause he's trying to make John McClane think he's just one of the people that kind of got away and that he thinks John's acting as if John's a terrorist or whatever. And they don't know who each other are at this point, you know, but he doesn't, you know, he's just acting like that because he knows it's John.
Well, he knows it's the guy.
Yeah.
Roy.
He knows it's Roy. Well, no, he knows it's John McClane now because, Ellis had blown in on the radio.
You're right.
So he knows it's him.
Yeah.
John McClane doesn't know that it's
Hans
right. at this point.
Well, and I'll say, I don't know how many Eastern Bloc terrorist leader guys can pull off an English accent really good and act. That was the only thing I thought was a little bit weird, how he pulled off that American accent so good and act.
It wasn't.
I didn't think
sucked.
It was good at all.
Well,
I thought it was horrible.
I would have figured out in the third word that came out of his mouth.
Compared to how he normally talked.
He almost sounded the same to me.
Yeah, I thought the same thing. Mm. Yeah, there was still that hint of accent. Now, was that purpose? Was it on purpose? I don't know, but I...
What do you mean?
Well, it had to be on
purpose. Like making him do a bad job of an accent on purpose?
Well, yeah. I mean, was it the movie, you know, the writers having him, like, not be completely Americanized? I don't know.
Well, I actually have a question you guys might know. Is that actor... what's his name, first of all? I can't remember.
Alan Rickman.
Yeah, does he have an accent like Hans in real life?
He's British.
He's British, yeah.
I think that he just did a bad job of doing an American accent. Like, I think that was probably the best he could do.
Huh. Yeah, I recognized that right away. I was like, that was horrible. Definitely a horrible accent.
I'll have to watch it again.
But it was a cool scene. It was definitely a cool scene. I like how he gives him the gun, and you're thinking at this point, like, he's giving him a loaded gun, which you find out it's not.
Right.
But because he passed the name test. You know, John McClane asked him what his name was. He said Bill Clay, and that was, like, verification to John that he was legit. So John, I think, still wasn't sure if it was Hans or not, right, when he gave him that gun.
Well, obviously, in hindsight, he really wasn't sure who he was.
Yeah. He wasn't sure. He wasn't sure, right.
Because he gave him the gun, which wasn't loaded. And, you know, but before he even finds out these issues, you hear Hans speaking German, telling these guys where they're at.
Right.
And then he's, you know, that's when he tells him, you think I give you a loaded gun or whatever?
And I love that.
Yeah.
He's like, well, well, well. Right. Hans. I love how he said that.
Right, and he was like, I'm going to count to three and you have to drop your gun by then. Oh, really?
Yeah. Just like Takagi.
Like Takagi, yeah. And then he doesn't even count. He just click, 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 yeah. click, click, click. Uh-huh. And so then Carl comes up with another guy and there's another big, we have another big shootout upstairs. And this is when, just before this, Hans recognizes this, they're having their little talk before giving the gun. He notices that John doesn't have shoes on.
Right.
You know, so then when the shootout starts happening, they're kind of got him pinned down and in this little like glassed in office as he's telling Carl to shoot the glass. I thought that was really cool of the writers to kind of put that in there to take advantage of the fact he's got no shoes on. He's barefoot.
Yeah.
I thought that was cool too, but it just reminded me that is one other thing I found in that bloopers site I was talking about. They were saying in that scene when they're shooting all the glass out, notice it, none of the outside windows get broken. Only the inside windows are getting shot out.
I believe that.
So none of the windows on the wall are getting busted out. And it's a glass building. So
they're really
I guess
weak
the bullets were stopping.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're really weak bullets.
Yeah, but that was cool. He ends up getting out of there.
Well, he ended up dropping the bag with the detonators and going into the stairwell, which again, I don't think they showed him actually going into the stairwell.
Well, Carl, I think, throws like one of those shock
a flashbang
grenades
hockey
or
puck.
Whatever. Yeah.
Hockey puck.
Yeah. And it so he kind of escapes that way. But he's all just banged up and bloodied up his feet. It was gross. It was cool, though.
Yeah, that was like immediately after that was when he called up Al and said, I don't like the feeling I'm getting now.
And I think this scene was killer. This is some of his best acting in the movie. When he was telling Al what to tell his wife.
My wife has heard me say, I love you thousands of times, but she's never heard me say, I'm sorry.
And just...
this was the scene I was snoozing.
Dude, listen to his voice and watch his face. He did a really good job. You don't think, really?
I'll say now, me being a married man, I felt more during that scene than when I was a youngster.
I'm not getting into door territory and saying the acting wasn't good. But what I'm saying is, if you go back to the Cloak and Dagger episode, point one, where Dor and I were talking, when we talked about Cloak and Dagger before, and the three of us, and Dor and I were saying that the scene with Davey and his father and he, you know, tells his father he hates him and that scene. And Dor and I were like, man, that cuts you deep. And you're just like, yeah, but you turned the TV off. You know what I mean? So now you're getting all, you know, like sappy over this scene. And I was just like, come on, I just make this movie end by now. This movie was too long for me.
It was a lot longer than I remembered it when I was young. I will say that.
And I personally did not need this scene. But I guess you do because I think Al kind of – this is when Al tells him his story, right? Doesn't Al tell him why he's a desk cop because he shot a kid or something?
I think so,
there's
some
scene, yeah.
There's some point there. That was another one I was like, I don't need this.
Well, dude, I have to disagree with you on this. I'm not a huge fan of long movies. In fact, I hate super long movies like 3-hour Batman movies. I could do without that. But – this I didn't feel was too long. I was with it the whole time, even through the FBI guys. So, yeah, I kind of liked – not that I liked the mushiness of the scene. I think he did an exceptional acting job in this scene.
Yeah, I'll say I can – in Sean's defense, the scene didn't need to be as long as it was. But I'm with you. I did think it was a good scene. I think John opening up was much better than Al opening up.
Yeah,
I didn't need to really know why he was a desk cop. I mean, I guess it plays into it at the very end.
Right. That was the tie-back for that.
Because he says he's never drawn his gun since that day or whatever.
If there's one thing
right.
they can teach you everything except for
how to make a mistake. Live with a mistake.
Live with a mistake, I believe, was it.
Yeah, so there's that scene, and they have their conversation, their little hug fest over the air. Sean wakes back up, and now we have the FBI again. Can't stand these guys.
Woo! They want just like Saigon.
Well, we're not at that part yet, but they want to kill the power. The whole grid and everything, and there's argument of whether or not. And this is when the other night we were talking about this, when the guy that's actually in the manhole is the guy from
The Burbs.
Yeah. The one neighbor, the real goofy neighbor in The Burbs.
Who I just like him. I like every, I don't know why. Every time I see him, I like smile because he's a goofball.
I only saw him that I know of in The Burbs, and he was great. That's a great movie. We are definitely doing that movie.
I don't know.
Steve, you never even saw it, have you?
Oh, it was.
I never saw it, or I don't remember it.
Lucky.
Yeah, we'll wait a few weeks, but we're definitely going to do that one. But they kill the power, which again, now this plan, this works out to Hans's plan because the last lock of the vault can only be disarmed or whatever with the power off, something like that, right? It was some crazy thing where they need the power
electromagnetic lock.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
They get in, and this is where they get to bearer bonds or something like that, and there's a whole bunch of stuff in there.
Yeah. I would say, dude, that guy was in a lot of stuff. Besides Die Hard, he was in Spaceballs, The Burbs, little monsters, The Hunt for Red October, which I do remember him in all those movies. Groundhog Day, he was in that. Last Action Hero.
You got Dora talking about this guy. He freaking loves this guy.
He was just good in all the movies. In every movie, he just had a little part, just a little on the side part. He just did good. In Spaceballs, you got to remember him in Spaceballs. He was one of the prison guards.
Yeah, I think I do remember.
Yeah. He was one of the guys that came out where they took his clothes.
That's a good movie.
Yeah.
But so they get into the vault, the payoff. It's a $640 million.
I like the scene too, because the music they played was great. They were all happy.
It's all,
yeah.
It's
an ode to joy.
Yeah, it's the same tune through the whole entire movie.
Well, but
done differently.
Here's the only part about that scene I caught this time that was.
I thought it was Christmas music mostly.
Well, it was mostly, but that. But the one part about this scene that caught me as being unrealistic was when the vault opened, Hans is sitting there and his hair is blowing. Where is this miraculous wind coming from? I don't know.
That's awesome. It was a nice vault.
Oh, yeah. Nothing but the best.
Yeah, and there was like a samurai suit in there. Just a whole bunch of stuff.
Yeah.
And so
it was cool.
They finally get their payoff. And now they need to implement their plan of get all the hostages up top, because they told the FBI they want some helicopters to be brought up to the roof. They would all get on with the hostages, take them to LA airport, and then have different directions after that, where the FBI goes, okay, but the FBI and Hans, they both have different ideas of what they're really going to do. Like, Hans is just like, take the people up there, they blow it up.
Blow them to bits.
Blow them to bits with the FBI. Right. By the time they realize it, we're already gone.
We're on a beach earning 20%.
Yeah, and the FBI has the idea.
It's a good percentage.
It's a real good percentage, yeah. And the FBI has the idea of they're just going to, I guess 20% of the hostages is disposable. They're just going to take these people out. You know, so yeah. They're going to take them to the roof, except for Holly.
Well,
because now
he literally seconds before figured out there's one picture turned down on Holly's desk, and Hans picks up the picture and he sees Holly and John.
Anybody figures it out because of the newscast. And this guy played a great part in the movie too. This aspiring newscaster, yeah, who is just who would do anything for the story. I liked his character. I didn't like him, right, obviously. But so he went to their friggin' house. I'm talking to the kids. Oh man.
He threatened to have the maid deported if she didn't let him in.
Oh.
And then they interview him, and that's how we find. And that was kind of cheesy too, because like Hans is standing up to get out of there, and then he just hears this little girl, say a name or something,
yeah,
like to make the connection of him to turn around and look at the TV. But so he makes the connection, looks at the picture, finds out that Holly Gennaro is actually Holly McLean. So he's going to have everyone go to the roof except for her. He's going to take her with him,
right. It's always good to have a bargaining chip, I think he said.
Yeah. So they're taking the people up to the roof. Now we have another, this is when Carl finds.
Oh, yeah. Fight scene.
John.
Fight scene.
Big fight scene. Hated it.
Totally unrealistic. Everything about it was really bad. Rolling around on the ground like little girls at times. But
it was almost like the My Bodyguard scene.
I don't know.
When Matt Dillon and Peachy were fighting.
Why are we talking about that now?
I have no idea. But I'll say.
All right. Anyway.
I always hate Hollywood fight scenes because no fight can last that long with that many punches.
Or kicks to the head
and everything else. I know. But it was to emphasize John's toughness is what they were trying to emphasize. So I understand why they did it. But yeah, literally as soon as John punched him, he punched him five times. Back to back, and Carl just shrugs it right off.
They both did. They both were like, I mean, Carl kicked him literally when John was on his all fours, yeah, and like a soccer Pele kick right to the face, and they get up, and it's like he gets a kick like that, then Carl jumps on him, he flips him, and is smashing Carl's face on like steel, like 6-inch steel pipe.
Yeah,
like I don't know, man.
But
I was like, this.
But here's
sucks.
The thing: when
I'm done,
when that
I'm ready for the end.
Really, he didn't like it that
no.
much.
When that he jumped on him. You could tell he's jumping on him softly. He's like holding back, like, oh, don't hurt him.
I noticed that too. He just, that was Why jump? That was like just bad maneuver.
It really was. But I will say, I liked how that fight scene ended.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah, when he, because he kind of, they're on the stairs or something, right?
And
he
wraps that chain around him. I'm going to kill you. Has him in a headlock, drag him up the stairs. I'm going to kill you.
He said he's going to cook him and then eat him.
Yeah.
And then Carl pushes John's chin back over the arm rail, and he's like bending backwards, pulls a chain around, wraps it around Carl's neck, pushes him over the edge, and then takes the other end of the chain and like flings him down to the other side of the room where he slams into a concrete wall. And I love the fact that you as a viewer assume Carl's dead.
Yeah, that I like that with the chain, but the rest of it, man, I really, I was ready for this movie to end. I had enough of this movie by this time. And
I didn't know you didn't like this movie that much by the end. I'm surprised to hear you say this, to be honest.
I save it for the show, Steve.
Wow.
See, we got listeners don't understand. We have to contain Steve early in the week because he wants to spill the beans on all of his thoughts on these movies. And so we got to yell at him and tell him to be quiet, turn his mic, you know, mute his mics and everything.
Mute his mic. It's never happened.
Save it for the show. But let's finish through with this thing. We're almost to the end of this and then we can talk more about it. But so John goes to the roof and basically.
Where's Holly?
He's looking for his wife, but he's telling everyone to get off through because he knows it's completely loaded with C4. Yeah. It's going to go. Starts shooting his gun. And now these two cowboy FBI agents that are in these, you know, gunships flying in, reminiscing about being in NAM.
Exactly.
Except for the only one guy was in grades. I just cannot stand these guys. And they start shooting at John McClane because they think he's a terrorist. And he gets everybody off there. And this is when he grabs
the fire hose
and jumps over the side of the building, smashing into the window, shoots it out.
You didn't like that scene? Oh, I thought that was awesome.
Did you really?
Yeah.
I guess I'm really not an action film fan.
Well, here's the thing. Everything about that scene, horribly fake. Okay, he's staying on the top. He's wrapping it around. He's like, I'm never going to go up in a tall building again. Oh, God. You know?
All right, what's fake about that? No, I like the fake part.
And then he jumps off the end, swings down to the window. It's coming off, but it doesn't come off yet. And it's like falling off the thing, and it's up against the building. Then he like bounces off, shoots the window, goes in, hesitates, realizes it's falling, barely gets it off and lets it fall. But, you know, it can't happen like that in reality. But I still like seeing John going through adversity. It was just a unique way to get him back in the building away from the explosion.
You know what I did like about this part? The only part of it that I liked was when he was bouncing, trying to kick the window
bloody
in.
Foot.
The bloody feet, yeah. Just like the detail to that. Okay, this guy's been through so much in the glass. Like that I thought was cool.
It made it like real, more real.
But then he shoots it and still busts through a bunch of glass. And then the roller wind up for the hose falling and him struggling. I don't know. I
liked that, you know, cause you think when he's in the building, you think he's okay. And then that falls down. It's like one thing after another. I kind of enjoyed that chain of events. And I'm right. And you guys are wrong about that.
Mm-hmm. Okay. If you say so, but he ends up escaping from that. He's okay. And he gets down to where the vaults are because I think one of the girls had told him that they took Holly to the vault.
Right.
He makes his way down there.
And he looks in his gun. He sees he only has two bullets left combined in both of his guns. And he knows he's in trouble. He's tired. He's beat up. He's bleeding. He's limping. He knows Hans has my wife. So he knows this is not good.
But he, I like how he tapes the gun on the back of his back.
And I kept thinking it was packing tape, but it was Season's greeting tape.
Well, it could have been.
It was weird.
I mean, that's why I thought it was packing tape as well. Yeah. But I think at that time of year, they make packing tape with little sayings on and stuff. I think my wife's used it. She used to ship a lot of stuff around that time.
Yeah, I think it was packing tape. Seasonal packing tape.
Yeah. And he ends up getting downstairs. It's a complete mess. The building looks like a mess. And
he looks like a mess.
Yeah, and he runs.
He's I like when he's, go ahead, dude. First of all, I like when he says, hi, honey, when he sees his
Hi, honey.
He's like, Hans, or something like that. And he has a little standoff with, I think it was Hans that was left with Holly and the
guard from the front door.
The faux security guard.
Huey Lewis.
Huey. And he just starts doing this like maniacal laugh. And they're just like, what is he laughing at? And even his wife is kind of staring at him. And that's when
in typical movie fashion, John got him to monologue, which is always the beginning to the end of the bad guy.
Right. Yeah.
How do you say cowboy?
Yeah.
You know. And then got to laughing.
Dude, I like your Asian German accent.
And that was really bad. And then, very craftedly had the gun taped up by the top of his shoulders, grabbed the gun, and within a split second, bang, bang, shoots Huey Lewis right between the eyes, I believe, and shoots Hans someplace. I don't know.
Yeah, like the shoulder or something.
Holly knew if they weren't communicating, like, then this wouldn't have, he couldn't have pulled it off, but she knew
that something was going on. Up. Which this never would have happened.
I know.
Come on. This guy's he's so sweaty. He's got blood all over. That packing tape isn't going to stick.
Yes, and here's another movie faux pas. How is he going to get that tape to his back himself with a little bit of tape when he's covered in blood and sweat? I will admit that's a movie thing you just got to believe and not question, because it was totally unrealistic. But by this point in the movie, I don't care.
Yeah, me too. I'm kind of
totally
at that point.
I totally released every inhibition because, for instance, John's undershirt, a wife beater tank top, literally changed colors like 18 times during the movie. So by this time, I was just, whatever. It's all good.
He didn't even have it on.
Well, at that time, by that time, yes, he took it off to put around his foot.
Yeah, I remember you mentioned that last week when we were talking. I didn't really notice it. Like changing.
It goes from white to white with big stripes on
degrees.
It. From white with dark, dirty, like on it, to back to white, then from white to solid brown. It's just, weird.
That's probably on that website that Steve found.
I bet it is.
But then
there was something about him shooting the glass. That scene was on the website too, shooting the glass with the fire hose.
Gotcha.
Was it?
I don't know.
We got to find it. We got to find that site. It's probably got all different movies on there, I'm sure.
Right. Well, and then this was the scene, the bringing back of her watch, because Hans got shot falling back, goes through the window, but has a hold of Holly's wrist, i.e. her watch. And this, I'm sorry, to me was one of the better death scenes in Hollywood, because he's hanging out of the window. Slow-mo, he's slowly bringing the gun up, and you don't see it in the scene until he's like almost has it up all the way. By that time, John finally gets the watch lock open, and he pulls Holly back, and then you see Hans get the gun right up to where he wants to get, and then he starts to fall. And the look on his face was one of the most authentic, I'm going to die looks I've seen on a Hollywood death scene. I just thought he did good. I am a genuine Rickman fan.
Oh, I am too. It's Severus Snape, man.
I was going to say Dogma. He did great in Dogma.
Yeah, he did. But you're right. That scene, the ending scene was done well. And I really didn't make the connection of the watch until second rewatch I did today. Because I watched it last week and I watched it today. And that's when I made that connection between the watches and when she says, you'll see it later. Oh, he'll see it later.
Right.
Now this is when we see it later. And that's what saved her.
Well, and I would say, I believe we missed one scene that I obviously used to light, which was when Theo went in the basement, got the ambulance out of the back of the truck, pulled it up to the loading dock, and the limo driver, can't remember his name,
Argyle
slammed the limo into the ambulance and then hopped out and punched Theo right in the face. I thought you guys would have definitely rejoiced over that scene.
I did like that scene a lot. You're right.
Yeah.
I rejoiced. It was an awesome scene.
Well, it shows
very happy about that.
Argyle knew what was going on because he had the radio, the TV, which he explains in the beginning. Well, this thing's loaded, man. It's got the CB, the radio, the TV.
Right.
So he was paying attention. He knew everything was going on. So he knew something was up when they pulled it. When he pulled an ambulance out of the back of a truck.
Right. And I honestly...
He was happy too when he punched him.
Yeah. He was giddy. And I'll say, I liked honestly seeing him being a part of taking down the bad guys.
Yeah, me too. It's a good call.
That didn't matter to me.
I like Hans's death scene too. I thought that was one of the better death scenes I've seen, especially when he's actually falling to the ground. And it's just completely silent as the cops watch. Right. And you just see a falling body.
Carl,
oh, man, I hope that's... Oh, man, I hope that's not a hostage. Right. Splat.
Oh, that reminds me. We forgot another great line from that deputy chief whatever. That was...
Oh, it looks like we're going to need a couple more FBI guys.
It was like,
yeah, that was... I don't know.
That guy's lines real. Was so stupid. It was horrible when Hans was falling up. Hope that ain't a hostage. And you just see the look on Al's face like, oh, he fell, he hit.
Well, so let's end this off now because they come down and now everybody is, you know, it's all done. You got the chief calling for, well, actually, no, first as Holly and John McClane are walking out, that's when Al and John meet, you know, right. They hug it out, you know,
Didn't the reporter confront them first?
No, that's after. This is gotcha, first he gotcha. Meets, yeah, they meet Al.
Right. And right here, this movie is set up to have one of the worst endings ever because it's like, oh, we meet. Yeah, great. We're both cops. Yeah, great. And it's like a fake finish. This is what in the wrestling business is a fake finish because you think all the action's over. Everything's done. Now it's just stupid ending time. And it's like, hey, good. You're a good cop. I'm a good cop. You're a good cop too. This is my wife.
Yeah.
You know,
you got a good guy. He tells her and this and that.
Yeah.
And then what happens? Another horrible part in the movie. Carl, the guy that was hanging by a chain.
By his neck, yeah.
How did he get down anyways?
Well.
Like, was that their first priority was to go up look for survivors and they see a guy hanging by a chain and they just brought him down? Like,
he obviously has some East German technique of falsifying a death and then went last second unchaining himself around his neck and then quietly coming down.
Did he have his hands in the chain or no? Was it all neck?
He had one hand up hands by it. I don't know if it was in it.
Okay.
And he stands up with a machine gun.
Yeah.
And then he starts getting shot, and it's Al drawing his gun for the first time since he, you know, shot a kid, yeah. I think it was, that he'd never drawn his gun. And
damn, Sean, you're ripping on this hard.
No, I'm not.
you are. There's this look of disgust.
All right. So then this is when the reporter comes up, right. the scumbag reporter comes up and Holly punches him in the face because she's seen the TV show and he went to the house.
It was a great punch. I like it because she punched like a girl.
And she should have.
And she should have.
And then when they show Holly and John walking off, you can see the reporter's kind of huddled up like in the background. He's kind of like holding the show.
And he just looks at the camera and says, Did you get that?
Yeah, and then that's the end, right? They get in the car.
And then you hear Bing Crosby starting to sing.
Argyle comes and picks him up.
Yeah, because Argyle had come out at one point, and he was like, he's cool.
He's with me.
Yeah. And that is Die Hard, the original.
Yes.
I've never seen any of other ones after that, nor will what? I.
Well, if damn, they follow man. Steve's normal chain of sequel-itis, I will say 2 had some good scenes in it. I'm not going to say it was better. 3 was quite bad, I think. Except for the very beginning. It was kind of funny good. But it's too hard to go back home to where John's an innocent cop kind of thing. You know what I mean?
Well, that's why they shouldn't make any more sequels. Like, you take this kind of cop that does not do amazing stuff. This is the impression I got at the beginning of this movie. You put him through like this thing where he just does something completely heroically amazing, and then you're going to have him do that 3 more times with 3 more movies. That doesn't work for me, you know? So, but I did like Die Hard 4.
Which one was that?
I have to admit, with Justin Long.
With the IMAC guy.
With the Mac guy, yeah. I enjoyed that one. I did like that one.
His handheld computer or whatever ran Linux. His laptop ran Linux, but that's about it.
Yeah, it was like a Nokia or something. And Kevin Smith made a cameo in it. It was cool.
I'm just going to take your word on it.
All right. So now we can talk about this. So I, for some reason, thought, Sean, I thought you really liked this movie and that's why we're doing it. But it appears to me, correct me if I'm wrong, that there's by the end of this movie, you just wanted nothing to do with it.
Yeah. When the FBI came in and then you had the fight scene with him and Carl and
too much and, fakeness.
I mean, it's a movie. I know it's a movie, and it's supposed to entertain.
No,
that's
cool. I don't like. I
had enough of it. I really did like from the beginning up until probably around when the
Johnson and Johnson.
Yeah, when they kind of came in, like around there, I just like was like, man, now it's going downhill.
Lost you.
But between that, if they could have wrapped it up somehow better, I don't know. Like even if with the FBI guys just not being so jerky, I don't know. It's just like too over the top.
Even Dwayne Robertson was too over the top. I mean, they could have made everything, all those guys a little bit more realistic, I think. For some reason, I still enjoyed it. And I usually get taken out of the movies much more for much less. Like I said, Cloak and Dagger, I got pissed off when they turned off the TV and not the Atari. By all rights, I should have hated the ending of this movie. But I enjoyed it. I think I just like Bruce Willis and his acting just took me through it. You know?
He gives you energy?
Yeah, I like him.
Yeah, I'm going to make him my Voxer image. Icon.
I'll say, when I looked at this movie again, revisited, and I saw how long it was, I was shocked at how long it was. And as I was watching it, I did think it was a little bit long, but I just liked Bruce. I liked Bruce Willis so much back then. I was more than willing to put up with the time. I liked the casting of Al. I liked the casting of Hans Gruber. Because those three, I was more than willing to put up with the time, but I understand exactly what you mean, Sean. Right around that scene of the FBI agents was where it almost got disjointed in the movie, where the flows kind of broke up. Before that, it was almost constant building up of bad stuff, and then it just went a little kooky.
Yeah, I mean, I think you still could have gone with the, you know, trying to get the people on the roof to blow it up. I just don't think that the characters of the FBI guys need to be stressed so much and overdone. That them flying in with the gunships, like, come on, did you really have to, why not have them land and something happens?
Right.
You know,
totally
just,
agree.
But that, you know, that's my opinion of it. But I did like it from beginning up until that point. I really did. I really enjoyed the story of it. I liked the interaction of John and Al. And even the John and Al, and like we said before, the chief, you know, kind of being, because Al kind of puts him in his place, you know.
Because
he tells Al to leave at some point.
Oh,
like you
yeah.
can consider yourself, you know.
Al gets a little loud
with him. You couldn't drag me out of here.
Yeah. Al gets a little loud with him, and as he should have, but he, you know, he actually did. And the chief, deputy chief, could have told him to get the hell out, you know.
Yeah. But
he was just a tool. Yeah.
But as far as the quality of the movie, I thought, like I said a couple of times, you know, I thought it was shot really well. I thought the action scenes, you know, like the effects of the shootings and stuff like that, like I thought all that stuff was done really well.
Top notch.
Yeah, I was impressed with it. But again, I do like Bruce Willis. I like Bruce Willis. Loopers. I don't know if you've seen Loopers. He's great in that.
I'm tempted to even watch that G.I. Joe movie just because he's in it.
I'm not.
He is?
He's in the newest one as of 2013. Well, here's a real question, Sean. Correct me if I'm wrong, but basically at every show we ask ourselves, what do you think, what did you think of it then? What do you think of it now? And would you let your kids watch it?
I thought we weren't doing that anymore.
Yeah, we weren't, but I'll answer it anyways. I don't know. I really didn't think anything of it back then. Like I said, I never saw the entire movie. It was kind of like if it was on, I kind of watched this or that. And it was a big name movie afterwards. I don't think it was when it was coming out, but I think it ended up being a really big, well-known movie. What I think of it now, I think I just explained. I just told you that. And no way would I let my kids watch
it. What age do you think you would let your kid watch? Because I and this is just me asking you personally.
16.
Thank you. Back then, I think because he was popular at Moonlighting, this was his big breakout kind of movie. I liked it a lot back then. It's lost a little bit of its shine just because of time, but it's still in the top in my top movies from the 80s, the top five movies from the 80s, definitely. There's no way I could let my kids see it. The violence was a little bad, but the F-bombs were insane. It was nonstop. And this was the first movie where you heard, I believe, F and A, you know, all spelled out, let's say, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And he said a lot. The counter I found was there was 50 mentions of the F-bomb in this movie. That's a lot. That's just a lot.
You know what? I wouldn't even have guessed that many. It didn't strike me really, other than a couple, you know, the yippee-ki-yay famous line.
That's what I'm here for.
I'm just saying though, but I never would have thought it was that many.
I knew he said it a lot because literally every time he ran, dove, jumped, saw something major, heard something, whatever, he said it.
Well, I don't know. I mean, you guys obviously still really enjoyed a movie.
I liked it. I am one for, there's a lot of things in movies that when it loses its reality or if they do something too crazy, it takes me out of it. I don't know. For some reason, I could tolerate it with this movie.
Yeah. I know it's an action movie or whatever, so I know you got
it. Dude, you don't have expect. To, dude, those, you're right. You were totally right. I didn't like the FBI guys either, man.
It just got too long for me. I was ready for it to wrap up. I thought they just went too long with something good.
Yeah.
So, I don't have any. I don't think I have any other standout notes on this actual any parts or anything like that. I don't know if you guys had anything you wanted to go back over. Or...
I mean, the last thing I'll just say is the movie was good enough. I think literally every sequel, because you know that came from this. Was because the first movie grew so much attention back in the day.
Isn't that why they make every sequel?
Well, I know, but no. I'm saying it's a testament that they made, whatever, four or five sequels, because the first one was that prevalent back then. It was that big back then.
I agree. I like the line that he told the cops that they have enough plastic explosives to orbit Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Yeah.
I didn't catch that.
Yeah.
Really?
I do remember hearing that. And I remember somebody said in a movie today, Bruce Willis was talking about action movies with someone else in the movie. And the one guy said, yippee-ki-yay. And Bruce was like, I don't think I've seen that movie. You know, referencing back to this movie. I don't know what meant to me.
You know, I will say, I think he played this part really well.
Mm-hmm. Well, and you know, one of the stupid pluses for casting him in this movie was as soon as he took off his shirt and was running around, you could see a big, huge scar on his right inside of his shoulder down to his armpit because he had a major surgery a couple years before that because of a bad shoulder. But seeing that scar...
Really? So that was real?
That was a real scar. But seeing that scar added to the authenticity of his toughness kind of thing. It was just one of those happenstances, you know?
Yeah.
That is cool. I didn't know that.
Well, I mean, especially for...
Did you just read that door?
I knew that back then because I thought it was fake.
I did notice it.
I thought it was fake, too.
But I thought it was fake as well. And at the point I did notice it, I think I probably thought it was supposed to be something from the movie, I guess. I don't know. I really didn't think about it much. But for being an actor who, I mean, not to say he was a no name, but he was not a big,
he wasn't
huge
a movie
actor
guy.
At that point. I mean, he really did a good job. And Alan Rickman did a great job.
Yeah, but I will say this, but Alan Rickman.
Other than his fake American accent.
Whatever. I don't care.
It sucked.
That door loves.
I like him too much to criticize him. He's one of the guys I have a hard time criticizing. I really do. But I'll say the one thing about Alan Rickman that I find amazing is, if you look at scenes from his movie throughout the years, I don't know if anyone has looked as different in all of his movies because sometimes you see him and you almost don't even recognize it's him. And this was one of those movies where when you see him, some people never realize, put two and two together, that's Alan Rickman. Yeah.
Well, yeah. When I think of Alan Rickman, I think of
Snape.
With longer black, straight black hair, greasy hair. Yeah,
same here. Dogma. Yeah.
But anything else, guys, on this one?
Do we Well, I don't know if we're about this one. I mean, I hope we do more action movies, but I hope we do all more movies. I mean, I don't care really. As long as we don't do Steel Magnolias, I'm okay.
It depends on when it was made, but I mean, hey, you're lucking out by not having to do Music Man because I think that was from the 60s, so you lucked out there.
Mm-hmm.
But no, I think
you don't like that rule, Dor?
What?
That we're only doing up to 80. It's, yeah, or
listen, no, stop. It's not for me to criticize. This is Sean's show. I'm merely a passenger.
And I feel bad because he threw a movie at me today, which I would love to do, but it really doesn't fit into the timeline. But we may make an exception for that movie, so we're not going to say what it is.
It depends on whose calendar you go by. If we go by the Mayan calendar, it's still fine.
The Mayan calendar.
So, anyways, that's gonna close out our review of Die Hard. But our next episode, it's kind of up in the air right now. We may have a guest, another guest next week. So, it could be My Bodyguard, 1980. I had Matt Dillon, Adam Baldwin. I kept telling Steve Alec Baldwin the other day, and he's like, "Why do you keep saying Alec Baldwin?" I'm like, "No, Adam Baldwin from Chuck." Or he mentioned Chuck. So it's either going to be My Bodyguard or The Last Starfighter. So one of those two movies, both good movies. So for anybody, if you're getting us through iTunes, if you want to leave us a comment on iTunes, that would be great. That would help boost our show in the rankings. If you have any ideas for movies, or any other ideas for the show, anything you want to add or a message you'd like to send to us, you can send that to showideas@throwbackreviews.com. You can follow us at Throwback Review on the Twitter. So, Steve Cherubino, anything you want to tell the people?
People, if you want to find out what I'm doing these days, go head over to tone40.com. I make music. I'm a musician in my mind. I only have one song up there now, but I should be having a lot more up there soon, and I think you guys might like it, so check it out. That's tone40.com.
Awesome. And what about you, Mr. Door-to-Door Geek?
I honestly implore people, leave reviews on iTunes. It's super helpful, and if I could, I would offer people $5 to do it, but that's not right. Podnuts.com if you want more of me. But, and yeah, show ideas at Throwback Reviews. I would love to get some oddball movies. Don't send us, you know, Star Wars, Raiders of the Lost Ark, E.T., Back to the Future. Send us something else. Send us nuggets.
Star Trek.
No, we already covered that in episode one, man. Me and Dor, there will be no Star Trek, no Star Wars. At least he didn't say Top Gun, Sean. Well, we already established that's episode 100. Episode 100 is going to be already.
What are we on, 4 or 5?
This
is
episode 5.
95 more to go, baby.
We're working our way up there. And if anybody wants to find out anything about my stuff, and I'm Sean because I didn't say who I was this episode or last episode. If you want to find anything about mine, you go to sjdiner.com. It's got my Twitter, my personal Twitter, my Google+, and all that good stuff. So that is episode 5, and until next time, thanks for listening.
Come out to the coast, we'll get together, have a few laughs.